It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And you can be forgiven for thinking that maybe you had fallen asleep for a week and awakened on July 27th instead of the 20th, and maybe even the 29th or 30th, because there is a lot going on in baseball, a lot of transactions. We just had one come through that probably doesn't have a lot of fantasy impact, as David Phelps seems to be on his way to Seattle. But it's been that kind of few days. There is a lot going on, so we are going to get to it and start with the most hyped trade, the trade the most people talked about this week. I actually don't think it was the biggest trade from a baseball perspective, but the trade that got the most talk this week is the Yankees getting Todd Frazier, Tommy Kahnle, and David Robertson from the White Sox for a package centered on Blake Rutherford. And we start with Todd Frazier, who, one, has quietly been better over the last 6-8 weeks or so than over the full season. He's kind of been his normal self, a pretty good low-average slugger rather than a bad low-average slugger. He moves to what should be a somewhat more favorable hitting environment. I'm up on Todd Frazier. I think that he's probably no longer sneaky. He was a sneaky good pickup a week ago when he had sort of returned to what he was. Now I think that sneaky is gone, because I think people are going to be excited about him in New York. But where do you kind of put Frazier in the wake of this deal, Fred?
Yeah, I think it's a slight boost for his value. I think where you were going, where he kind of is what he is. He's not going to hit for average. This could help him maybe hit an extra homer or two. Beyond just Yankee Stadium, there are some nice parks to hit in throughout that division. And then it may help him maybe drive in or score a few more runs. The Yankees should outproduce the White Sox by a fair amount the rest of the way. So, but that being said, I think he kind of is what he is. And I think part of the problem with Frazier's value this season is partially that he hasn't performed great, but also that so many other players now are kind of doing what he has done. And when I see in shallow league players on waivers such as Josh Bell and players like that, it's hard to get too excited about Frazier. I think maybe my takeaway with him is, if you've been holding him, if you drafted him and you've been keeping him all year and he's been in and out of your lineup, I think you put him in now and give him a couple weeks with the Yankees and see how things go.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that you note is the RBI opportunities. That's a pretty good lineup. It's got some guys who get on base. He will have more chances to drive in runs. I wouldn't be at all surprised if over the remaining, whatever it is, 65, 70 games, he comes real close to the 44 RBI he managed in his first 90, 95 games. The trade that's going to have more impact on the standings, more impact on the team that acquired the key player, is J.D. Martinez. He goes to the Diamondbacks. He actually got hit on the hand, I think as a hand or a wrist, by a pitch yesterday, but it sounds like he's all right. Sounds like there's no real worry about that. But I'm kind of two minds on Martinez, because on one hand, man, do I like the thought of him hitting in that ballpark, hitting in a lineup with Paul Goldschmidt. There's a lot to like there in that regard. On the other, one thing that you sometimes talk about, and the principle that we've kind of touched on some, is that when you're at the top of your range, you're probably not going to go up from there. And then you add in sort of a change in environment for a guy who had really thrived in Detroit. And I think whereas your initial thought is a guy going from Tigers to Diamondbacks, a hitter, that's good. I think maybe as much as anything, it gives me confidence that he can maintain his level, but I don't think he takes another level. Do you think that's a fair way to look at Martinez?
Yeah, I am definitely. I am typically wary of players who are, like you said, performing kind of at the top of their range, and when they get traded, there's really nowhere to go but down. I agree with you. I think him going to Chase Field, that should be good for him. If he continues to play the way he's playing now, maybe he could hit home runs at a little bit higher rate. There were rumors about him going to Colorado. Now, I was really excited about that. That would have been just really interesting and fun. Someone who has been crushing the ball the way he is, and put him into that Rockies lineup. But the Arizona move is good for him on paper. So I think he probably just continues performing the way he has been. And I think some people think that the Diamondbacks lineup has been a lot better than the Tigers so far this year. It actually hadn't. At the time of the trade, the run scored between the two teams was pretty similar. Now, you could say if you put Martinez on Arizona all year, the gap between them, it would probably be a little greater. So I think it's fine for his value. I think it probably gives slight upticks to players like Goldschmidt, who maybe score a few more runs with Martinez hitting behind them in the lineup. And maybe it costs a couple runs for players like Miguel Cabrera, that they don't have Martinez hitting behind them. And it may be a sign with the Tigers that other moves, this could be, it may not be, but it could be the start of other moves. And then maybe the Tigers lineup looks even weaker than it does right now by the time we're talking on August 1st.
The one thing I would say on that is I don't know who else hitter-wise the Tigers really have to move unless they just fully blow it up, unless they just go, you know, full massive changes and guys like Upton and Cabrera coming to play. It's hard for me to see them dealing Castellanos, you know, even if they're retooling or rebuilding, because that's a guy you want around when you're good again. So I don't worry that much about the Tigers lineup, about additional things. And one thing that I would say about Martinez is he seems like a guy that you maybe would have been thinking of as a bit of a sell high, because he had been, to some extent, even better this year than he'd been in recent years. And maybe if you needed a fix somewhere else, you could have made a move. I would be less inclined to do that now. I think that's kind of what I was getting at in the first place. I like his chances to maintain the level he's been at so far more than I would have if he stayed with the Tigers.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the Martinez owners are probably pretty excited. Just people get excited, I find, when their players get traded in fantasy. So, you know, they see him going to Arizona. It's probably not a great time to buy on him because, you know, as we said, he probably can't get much better. But his owners may have stars in their eyes thinking that, you know, that he could really explode down the stretch, which totally could happen. I just don't think it's necessarily likely that he can do better than he's been doing.
We move on. Those are basically the big trades. Probably two more things will break in the next 3 hours between now and when this goes live, but them's the breaks. I'm going to start with something to go off script a little bit. I apologize, but kind of feel like we at least need to address, even though we don't really know. Chris Bryant suffered a sprained finger yesterday, and they took x-rays. They are pretty confident there's not a broken bone in there. But, you know, that's a guy you worry if you got Bryant. You worry about, as I've talked about a lot, you worry about anything involving a hitter's hands, wrists, fingers, anything. But, you know, if he's down for a few days, it doesn't really change anything. But do you do anything? Do you look at it? Do you think La Stella's interesting? Is there anything to be taken from Chris Bryant, presumably having at least a chance to be down for a few days?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with hopefully it's just a few days at this point. We talked about Bryant a few weeks ago, and that overall he is kind of the same hitter, but he is a little disappointing in some areas of fantasy this year. In the sense, well, he's on pace to drive in about 70 runs, which is just really disappointing, and his homer total is on pace, you know, maybe 35 or less, which in a year with a lot of power hitters is disappointing. So he hasn't lived up to that, you know, top five pick billing. And this is the second time he's had just a minor tweak-type injury of late. So sometimes those things can pile up. It makes me a little more pessimistic that we'll see. I thought at some point we'd see the big month from Bryant, the 9-10 homer month, and everything gets back on pace. And it's starting to make me pessimistic that we're going to see that this season. Maybe we will, but I don't know. I'm not feeling it right now.
No, you definitely have to wonder. What looks like a more significant injury right now, we certainly, for Bryant's sake, hope it doesn't turn out to be this kind of thing. But Carlos Correa, looking like he's going to be out a good 6 weeks, maybe September 1st or so. It's funny that it's not. You got to think the Astros are primed to weather that, but your fantasy team is probably a little less primed to weather that. What steps are you taking if you're going to be doing without Correa until, you know, again, probably the beginning of September?
Yeah, I mean, we are hitting the point in the season, you know, early in the season, I would say, you know, pick up the best replacement shortstop or middle infielder that you can get and go from there. Now, we are hitting the point as we get closer to August where owners, especially in roto leagues, like, will need to look at their categories. And Correa was delivering a great batting average and plenty of power. wasn't stealing bases at all. Some owners may want to replace him with the most powerful player they can get their hands on, which at shortstop may not be much, but some owners may want to look for some speed to replace him because maybe that's an area where they can grow. So they should start looking that way. I've seen some players like Orlando Arcia or Hernan Perez, both from the Brewers, available in a lot of mixed leagues that may be decent fill-in options. And I think there's a big decision about whether you keep Correa or not. In most cases, I would. Like, obviously, if you have DL space, you keep him. If you don't have DL space, if I put the over-under on Correa plays 20 games the rest of the season, like, where do you think that falls? Because I think that Houston will get him back going in September, but if they have a big lead, he probably gets at least a day off every week, doesn't he?
I'd probably take a slight over on that, only because that's late enough that even with a big lead, you know, I think you're going to want him, of all guys there, you're going to want him to get those at-bats. You're going to want him to get reps. You know, I think the biggest worry for the Astros right now regarding Correa, if we're kind of stepping back and just kind of thinking along with the team, I think the biggest worry for the Astros right now with Correa is not that he's not healthy. It's that this lingers to whatever point it is, September 1st, September 10th, September 15th, and he doesn't get back to full game speed in time for the playoffs. I think that's really what they're worried about. If I'm them, that's what I'm worried about, is this guy going to be ready to be his full 100% self when the postseason starts? And so to me, that argues less for giving him breathers when he comes back and more for getting him reps when he comes back. And you know, this seems like a small thing to parse, but I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is there is a significant difference at this point between whether this guy gets 65 at-bats or 100 at-bats from here to the end of the season. That's with what we're working with in terms of remaining season, that's a significant difference. But to answer your question, 20 games, I think I would take an over right now. And the other thing is, we do acknowledge here sometimes that not every decision is rational. Man, I could not live with the thought of dropping Carlos Correa, even in a league where it was really hard to keep him on my roster. I cannot deal with the thought of dropping him, having him come back a little sooner than expected and just going nuts for the last 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, so I think the thing is, if as long as we keep hearing that he's on maybe a six-week timeline, then he's pretty much a must-keep. If we ever hear that that timeline is going to push more towards 8 weeks, then you've got to start. If we're looking at mid-September, then maybe you'd have to start thinking about letting him go, depending on what your bench space is like.
We return again to 2017's surprising sluggers, and a couple of these guys we've talked about a few times, but you framed this in an interesting way. I thought Logan Morrison, Mike Moustakas, Justin Smoke, Jay Bruce, all on pace for 40-ish or more home runs. From here to the end, who do you like for home runs? And my answer is actually the guy with the fewest home runs on that list, Jay Bruce, and my reasoning is he's the one guy who's done this before. You know, he's hit 32, 34, 30, 33. He hit 33 last year. So you're asking me who I trust the most, essentially who maintains what he's doing the most from here to the end of the year. I'm going with Bruce pretty easily, even as much as he ebbs and flows, and he is an extremely streaky guy. He can look awful, and he can carry an offense, but I still won't be surprised if any of the other guys tail off some, just because even though this is a very home run friendly environment, it seems, in 2017, none of these guys have done it before at this level, and Bruce has. Do you like one of the other guys more?
Yeah, I think I like Smoke more. You wrote a good article about Smoke and just his overall improvements at the plate, not just the power improvements, but his overall improvements. And I have obviously watched Smoke a lot, so I'm a pretty big believer in him at this point, and I'm a pretty big believer in Logan Morrison. I think he can keep this up. I was actually going to take Bruce to maybe hit the fewest, but it wasn't really contradictory to any of the points you mentioned. My one thought on Bruce is it's been pretty well documented that the Mets really need to move either him or Curtis Granderson between now and the trade deadline. And assuming they get that done, his opportunities, like, we'll just see where he ends up. And if he should end up in a full-time role, even if he's on another team, but I wonder if the acquisition cost would be so low on someone like Bruce or Granderson because they're pending free agents that maybe he does end up on a team that doesn't have, you know, a huge role for him and he had some days off, and then that kind of throws him off his pace. And it was just, you know, home park and everything else, comfort level. He really tailed off after he joined the Mets last season. It took him a while to get comfortable there. So just that was a bit of a deterrent for me. But what I wanted to mention with these hitters is they're really interesting, because if you strongly believe that one of them can keep up their 40 home run pace, you can probably still buy them at a reasonable enough price because they aren't big names yet. And if you own one of them and you don't believe he's going to keep up his pace, you can probably sell them for a reasonable price for help at another spot. So they're really interesting values right now.
Tell you about a player hitting .306 with a .390 on base. If you prorate his stats out to 162 games, 30 home runs, 32 steals, 115 runs, and 95 RBI. That's a guy you'd be interested in, real interested in. That's also a 29-year-old player who has spent, before this year, 136 games in the big leagues, Tommy Pham. Pham, to me, has long been one of the most interesting guys, and that's because I covered him the day he was drafted, and he was a fairly late pick that the Cardinals were super excited about when they drafted him out of a high school in Las Vegas. He was just one of those guys that they thought they had hit a total steal in the 16th round. So he's a guy I've followed for a long time. And he's a really interesting player who at various times has done a lot of really exciting stuff in the minor leagues. And so, you know, I don't think the question is, can he keep this up? Because I think the answer to that is pretty clearly no, that's not going to happen. But it's a fair question, how much of it can he sustain? He's stolen bases in the minors before. He has hit for some power in the minors before. You know, he is a guy who has at various times, has rarely showed it all at once, but has at various times showed a lot of different skills. And so which of those are you buying? Because that affects in what formats and on what rosters you're adding him.
Yeah, I'm not buying the batting average. His BABIP's really high. I think the batting average comes down. Maybe he's more like a 260. 265, even to maybe a 270 type hitter, but I am buying just kind of the power speed combo. I think also on a Cardinals team that's really been looking for answers on offense, he's already done enough to cement himself as having a regular role. He could probably even ride a bad week and stay in the lineup every day. And now I'm going to say something that's totally not statistical analysis, but I feel like these things happen with the Cardinals sometimes.
Yep.
And you can maybe answer that better than me. The Cardinals and the Orioles are two of the teams where I find just hitters sometimes. Pham didn't come out of nowhere, but these hitters get hot and then stick with these teams. And we saw Aledmys Diaz last year, absolutely no buzz around him. And then he goes out and has a really great year and is a huge fantasy value pick. So I feel like Pham should be owned in every league, and he's still available in a lot of them.
He kind of reminds me, his performance profile kind of reminds me of a guy we talked about a few weeks ago who then promptly got hurt, unfortunately, Michael Taylor. He seems to be doing kind of similar kinds of things, and I would kind of, if Taylor comes back, and it sounds like he's at least moving in that direction, I kind of project Pham in a somewhat similar way to Taylor, which is kind of what you were describing. Homers, steals, maybe not necessarily batting average. I probably like a little more power from Taylor if he's healthy. But, you know, that kind of player, and that kind of player can sure help you win off the waiver wire.
Yeah, it's always nice to have those players, and these are kind of back end of your roster. They're not your Nolan Arenado, not your, you know, your best player, but it's nice to have those guys at the back end of your active lineup where when you check the box score in the morning, you know, if they provided you with a home run, you won't be surprised, and if they provided you with a stolen base, you won't be surprised, and if they got three hits, you won't be surprised. Just, you don't know how it's going to come, but on a regular basis, something good's going to happen.
Wilson Ramos started off pretty slowly right upon being active, and we're still only 12 games into his return to action. But his first few games have kind of tamped down. If you look at the past week or so, he's kind of hitting like he did back in 2016 when he was one of the most valuable fantasy players around because he hit for average and power at catcher. He is doing that again. He is getting hits, he is getting home runs, he is in a lineup that has a lot of power and should provide him continued opportunities to drive in runs. Where does he rank among the sort of semi-disposable catching tier that is most catchers in mixed league fantasy?
Yeah, I think Ramos, because he has the upside to be an, you know, a top three, top four catcher. I mean, he was top one or two last season for most of the year until he was hurt. I think he's, even if we expect some bumps in the road with him coming back from a serious injury, I would still prefer him over all of the catchers who are providing just kind of blah production. If I own Jonathan Lucroy, Russell Martin, Matt Wieters, Wellington Castillo, I would be willing to move on for them in a one catcher league for Ramos. I would, like, I'm obviously not moving on from a catcher. You're not moving on from the Posies, the Sanchez, like the catchers who are hitting really well, Sal Perez, and are really productive. But if you have one of those catchers who's just on pace for the usual, like 15 home runs, 60 RBI, he's going to hit 240 to 250, 255, I think you drop any of those to pick up Ramos. And those players that I all mentioned and Ramos are all owned in similar percentage of leagues. So there are people out there who could make that switch if they want to.
Cameron Maben going to be down for a few weeks and had really tailed off. He's hitting 238. Yes, he leads, believe it or not, he leads the American League in steals with 25, which tells you a lot in a couple of different ways. But the degree to which he had crashed to earth even before he got hurt, and the fact that the injury is in the lower half of his body, which makes me worry about his speed coming back, means I would have no hesitation to drop Maben for somewhat similar player, for one of those cheap speed guys that tend to be on the waiver wire, even in a steel scarce environment. Are you holding on to Maben, or are you with me? You can drop him for nearly anything that might help you.
Yeah, I'll drop him in 15-team league. I would, or 15-team roto league, I would probably keep him. Anything shallower than that, I would drop. And actually, I found it interesting, the announcement on Maben's injury came shortly after, right around that time when we found out about the Yankees-White Sox trade and that Yoan Moncada was coming up. And Moncada profiles as someone who can steal a lot of bases. And at that moment, Moncada and Maben were owned in almost the exact same percent of leagues. So there, at that point, there was an easy switch for owners to get a stolen base source and one with maybe a little more power and a lot more exciting, that's for sure. Now, Moncada's percentage has risen, but it hasn't capped off yet. Like, there's still plenty of room there. So there are probably some owners out there of Maben who could still, if they've been a little lazy to get to their keyboard, still have a chance to make that switch. And Moncada, we don't know if he'll steal a lot of bases, but he certainly profiles that way.
Look at you teeing me up for the next topic, and that is Yoan Moncada. He has been added. He's going to play. He was stealing bases and doing a few other things, but not completely lighting it up in AAA this year. I have him as a worth adding, but don't expect him to change your fortune single-handedly. You think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, when people say, hey, look, you got to pick up Yoan Moncada because he could do something like what Cody Bellinger's done, well, that's just not true. Like, that's what Bellinger's done is just ridiculous and isn't going to be, you know, matched by someone else this season, or is highly, highly unlikely, or probably even next season for a rookie to come up and have that level of immediate success. But, I mean, we talk sometimes just about, you know, the guy you drop, you could get him back. I mean, you drop someone and you get Moncada because his ceiling is really high. And if he does take off right away in the majors, you want to be the one to own him, because the guy you drop is probably not helping you to that great of a degree. That's why you picked him to be the one you could drop. So I think you have to pick him up in all leagues right away. I'm not too concerned about his AAA numbers this year. And now I'm going to say another unscientific comment today, that he was amazing at the start of this season in AAA. And I feel like we've seen this before from some top prospects. They really take off in the minors, and then maybe we hit the date where everyone's expecting them to come up and they don't. And then sometimes I wonder if whether they get a little frustrated or they get a little bored or what, but then they just kind of tail off and they're kind of, you know, I don't know, less aggressive in the minors or something. To me, the long-term potential of Moncada hasn't really changed. He has power and he has plenty of speed.
No, I think you make a great point. And I think there's two kind of conflicting ideas here, because on the one hand, you absolutely can get in the trouble. You can get in trouble scouting the stats at all, but you can get into big trouble scouting the stats by worrying too much about minor league game logs. You know, it's a fun thing to do. Oh, you know, Ozzie Albies since June 1st. Oh, my goodness, that's ridiculous. And you can get in trouble doing that. At the same time, I do think sometimes the shape of a player's season is worth noting. A guy who started slowly at a new level and then came on strong, or as you note, a guy who was heavily hyped, maybe thought he was going to make the big league club, goes out and rakes, and then after a while gets tired of it. These things happen. And You know, I think it to some extent that those ideas kind of make sense together, because part of the danger in scouting the stats is you don't know what led to that. But I do think you should always kind of ask those questions, and I think that's a definitely a fair point to make with a guy like that. Staying in Chicago but moving to starting pitchers, Jose Quintana basically pitched in his Cubs debut like the guy that his underlying performance said he should be even this year. Our own Mike Petriello had a really nice piece about how Quintana is basically pretty close to the same guy he's always been, despite the ERA. Getting him into the National League, relying on those underlying factors still being there, how high do you rank Quintana right now?
Yeah, I think he's probably a number three mixed league starter. If he has a few nice starts, then I'll probably move him up to number two. His strikeout rate is good. It's not amazing, but it's definitely good enough to be a number two starter. I think he's been inconsistent enough this season that, I mean, he was traded. This is a much more favorable situation for him, but he still has to do the pitching. And at times he hasn't done that very consistently this year. So I still want to see a few good starts from him before I make him a number two starter, which is kind of his ceiling. But I'm okay with calling him a number three mixed league starter now.
We stay with the Cubs, who, believe it or not, have kind of rotation questions. Kyle Hendricks is coming back. Some notion that John Lackey is pitching for his job. A lot of variables in there. Obviously, John Lester and Jake Arrieta are not pitching for their jobs. But as this offense heats up, as the questions come, there seem to be some opportunities, both buy and sell opportunities, depending on how you use things. As you look at that Cubs rotation, who strikes you as a sell high opportunity? We'll probably have many of those. A buy low opportunity, a get out now before situations change kind of guy. As you look at that rotation that's surprisingly in flux, what are the fantasy opportunities there as far as you see them?
Yeah, I think there are buying opportunities here with all of Lester, Arrieta, and Hendricks. I'm not really buying on Lackey just because the upside is still pretty marginal with him. But for the other pitchers, I think there's a buying opportunity here. And it may not work out, but the scenario I see, if on your fantasy team you need to fix your pitching staff, you need to get better performances from your pitching staff to win your league, that's clear to you. You need to go out and make a trade in that direction. Well, let's say you want to go get the Max Scherzers, the Chris Sales, the guys who are pitching lights out right now. The other owner is going to ask you for your Mike Trout, your Bryce Harper, your Nolan Arenado, and maybe you're not prepared to give those players up. So you have to find some pitchers who are not pitching that great but could pitch great from this point forward. And I think the Cubs pitchers are a good place to look, because I don't think either one of us would be surprised in the least if the Cubs had a great second half, were one of the better teams in baseball, roared into the postseason because they have such a talented group. So I think if you're going to look for pitchers who haven't been great yet but could be great the rest of the way, those Cubs pitchers are a nice target. Are you feeling the same way, or do you think maybe the other argument is that them going deep into October last year, maybe this will just be an off year for their pitching staff, so they're not good buy lows, but I think I would rather buy low on them than Cueto, Verlander, or some of the other supposed aces who haven't pitched that way this year.
Well, when you put it like that, I would agree, but I'd still, particularly with Arrieta, I'm just not sure the upside is there anymore. I think maybe, after a much shorter peak, I think maybe Verlander is kind of a good parallel there, where you just wonder, actually, probably not, because Verlander's been really good lately. Lester, maybe. Lester is a guy who I can see having that kind of surge. I'm just not sure Arrieta still has that in him. His peak was pretty short. He was as good as anybody, but it was a real short peak. So I would be somewhat hesitant to do that. I understand it. I mean, look, you got to get what you can get, and if you need ace caliber performance and you can't give up what it takes to get it, you got to find it somewhere. I'm just not sure those are the guys I would be looking at. I am going to turn around your next question, because the way you framed it to me was how Aaron Sanchez has not been good, and now he is hurt again, dealing with a blister issue again, and your question was time to drop him in shallow leagues. to me, honestly, I've already dropped him. I mean, I and so my question is, do you see any reason to be fishing around, pick him up as a stash? Do you see any reason to add him? Because I already got out. He hasn't been good. He hasn't been healthy. And I don't see how you could still be sticking with him at this point, honestly.
Yeah, you're on the early end then of people who have gotten out. I think a lot of people looked at that 3 ERA from last season, and then the fact that maybe that they were blister problems and not an elbow problem or something like that, and thought, okay, I've got to hold him through when he comes back in early July because he could be a 3 ERA pitcher the rest of the way. But it doesn't seem to be happening. The blister problem popped up again last night, and that's the third time this season. Probably going to have some more time off now. I don't know for sure, but I think now is the time for more people to start getting rid of him. His ownership percentage is still really high. To me, he's not a buy low. This blister thing, I mean, I feel like we don't understand these things very well, and we don't know how to timetable them yet. Maybe we will down the road, but we don't know how to timetable them, like shoulder and elbow and injuries and things like that. But it seems like maybe this is going to take an extended absence from pitching for him to get past this, because he took a fairly long absence and it came back fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing is that this is, it seems like when you first hear it, kind of an easy thing to dismiss. But I think what we have seen with a few different guys, with Rich Hill as well, is that, you know, this is a significant thing. This is a thing that can recur, and it is a thing that can sideline guys for a while. So, you know, to start with, I don't think Aaron Sanchez is going to just miss one start. I hope that's the case, but I'm not real confident thinking, oh, yeah, he'll be right back. So,
and when we talk
about, I hope he gets right. I hope he is back next year to being the guy he was last year. But I would have a hard time putting much stock in him for the remainder of 2017.
Yeah, and when we talk about teams and their motivation with players, I mean, the Blue Jays have been in the postseason the past couple of years, but this year they're quickly falling out of the race. Their lineup isn't scoring. They're starting to look like sellers. Sanchez threw a ton of innings last year, more than they were hoping he would throw. It all adds up to, if this blister thing's going to be an issue, to them being super cautious with it and just making sure that he's their ace, you know, next April.
Is Trevor Cahill a guy that people shouldn't be sleeping on?
Yeah, I think Trevor Cahill's a must-own. And, I mean, I know he doesn't have, like, it's been a long time since Trevor Cahill was a must-own. Like, we're going back many years now. But when you look just, like, obviously his ERA's low, and that's an obvious one, but he's getting a lot of strikeouts. He's getting a ton of ground balls. Those are two really, really important qualities in a season where there are so many home runs. And he's still sitting on waivers in more than half of 10-team leagues. And I don't understand it. And he's someone who also could get traded to a contender in the next 10 days or so. So I think he's someone that everyone has to pick up. And I guess he's a buy low because he's sitting, but he's not a buy low if he's on waivers. You can just pick him up. But do you think I'm too high on him? I know that it's been a while since he was really good, but I think when we look at the skills, you have to give him a shot that he can keep this going.
I hear you. I think what I would say is I at least understand the hesitation. I understand why people aren't entirely willing to buy, you know. I mean, one, the walk rate is a little disconcerting. Two, you know, this is a guy, it's hard to shake a guy who was just out and out let go by a bad team. I mean, it just, so I understand where it's coming from, but at the same time, guy's 29. It kind of feels like he's 34, but he's 29. And he was a pretty good starter not that long ago. So I'm a little mixed. You know, I would worry a little about him getting traded. Actually, I know that he was good for the Cubs last year, but he hasn't been a really good starter in quite a while before this year. And so my worry would be if he goes to someplace less pitcher-friendly than San Diego, does this whole thing work a little less well?
Yeah, it's totally possible. I just think in a season where we're struggling to find reliable starters,
yeah,
you know, he's still going to tie two things together. Aaron Sanchez is still about 80% owned in Yahoo leagues, and Cahill's like under 40. So, like, to me, there's like, for that would be an example of just an easy,
yes,
switch. People who are let down from someone like Sanchez, go ahead and make the switch to Cahill.
Yes, that is a move I would make in an instant. Luis Castillo is a really intriguing guy. You know, not a super hyped prospect coming up, though I do think the Reds were certainly excited to get him. And he was, of course, partly involved in that weird, partially nixed deal last year. But he's been very good. He is at 1.24 strikeouts per inning. He's walked a few guys, but he really didn't walk guys in the minors. It's part of what's interesting is his the shape of his performance has been different than it was in the minors. He is striking out more guys and walking more guys. And I'm sure there's a really interesting question to be asked there about why, if you could dig into the data, whether he is kind of changing his approach at all. But, you know, he has come through an absolute murderer's row in his first few starts. He has gone up against some very good offenses. The Nationals twice at Colorado, at Arizona, and home against Milwaukee. There has not been a friendly matchup in there. The friendliest matchup in there was either at Washington or home against Milwaukee, and neither one of those is a whole lot of fun when you pitch for the Reds. It gets a little easier after this. Is he going to get even better? The schedule getting softer kind of insulate against the bumps that are sure to come? I mean, this guy's really exciting. Where are you on him?
Yeah, I view him similar to how I view Cahill, although they're completely different cases, just in that the skills he's showing warrant making a pickup and go ahead and drop someone who, you know, isn't showing that kind of skills to you. You're right, like, the schedule's been terrible. He still managed a low ERA. He's still managing to strike out a lot of batters. He is walking too many batters, but maybe when he faces some more mediocre lineups, you know, he won't walk quite so many batters, because that wasn't a huge problem for him earlier this season. So I did look. He has two starts next week. I think he might be on our list for later on the show, and the first one's at Yankee Stadium. So things don't get easier for him immediately, but they're bound to get easier sooner or later. So I think this is someone to pick up in most leagues, and, you know, at the very least, I think he'll get a respectable ERA and plenty of strikeouts, and hopefully he can get the walks down and the whip will be fine as well.
We will move to talking closers in just a moment. Before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, focusing on the lighter side of baseball. If you've made it this far into our podcast, we think there's a pretty good chance you'll enjoy it. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. This week's episode broke down a long-lost game of catch between Torrey Hunter and a young George Springer, the time little leaguer Todd Frazier met Derek Jeter, and how to spot the next future big league stars today. If that sounds like something you'd be into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. Now back to the 411, and guess what? We're talking about the Rangers closer situation again. Boy, we were wrong on Matt Bush, huh? Is Alex Claudio the guy now?
I think he's not. Maybe we were wrong on Matt Bush, but I'm still willing to be wrong on Claudio. I know he got a couple saves, but he's a lefty, and they used him. I was watching his usage. So he got saves coming into the All-Star break on Friday and Saturday, and then on Sunday, they brought him in a close game in the eighth inning. So that's 3 days in a row they're having him pitch, and the third one was definitely not going to be a save situation. And to me, that's not how you treat someone who's your new closer. So I think Claudio is still a matchup type guy who could get a few more saves, but I'm not going out to pick him up in a mixed league. I still think it will be someone else, whether it's Keone Kella when he comes off the DL, which should happen any moment now. He might be the one who I would want to scoop up. Is Claudio the one who you would want to own in Texas?
I'm just not sure I'm buying any of them right now. I'm probably wait and see unless I'm really desperate. You know, there's still some situations in flux, and I'm probably just going to leave that alone unless it's a really urgent need. Another of those situations may be in flux. The White Sox is Swarzak your guy?
I think Tyler Clifford's their guy for now. That's kind of the word out of Chicago. I would not pick up Clifford unless I was extremely desperate. Like, we talked a couple weeks ago about, like, the Sam Dyson level of desperation for saves, which has gone okay so far. I would have to be even more desperate than that to pick up Clifford or anyone else from the White Sox bullpen. Would you, is there anyone there? Like, would you pick up Clifford? Would you pick up Swarzak? Is there anyone you're targeting?
I, I would hesitate to pick up Clipper, though. You know, I thought there was an interesting thing written, I think it was in the Joshia newsletter recently, about how it hasn't been that long since Clipper was looking really good. You know, he was he has not been bad all year. He's been bad for a few weeks now. So, you know, I'm a little less inclined to worry about him and think maybe there's some chance he gets sorted out. I will say that if Swarzak were to get the job, I'd like him quite a bit. You know, I'd like him as sort of a mid-tier closer if they committed to him. In the absence of that, I'm probably not picking him up to as a hedge. But if he got the job, I'd like him. I wouldn't love him. I wouldn't have him on that top tier, but I'd feel pretty good about him. A situation that I don't think anybody expected to get this messy is in St. Louis. Again, kind of a weird, just not something you would have expected to get to this point. They've got some pretty good pitchers. They've got a manager who I probably sneers when he says the word committee under any circumstances, and yet it's wide open. Anybody you're surely adding right now there?
Hey, if I was going to add someone, I think I would add Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, I know Brett Cecil got their last save. I thought that was curious. He came out for a save on Sunday and blew it, and then they brought him back out for a save on Monday, and he converted it. And I was surprised they brought him out in the first place, and then when he blew it, I thought, well, he won't get another chance. Now, I'm going to believe that the Monday one then was pretty matchup-based with him being a lefty. I don't see Cecil being their closer. Hasn't really gotten on track the way I hoped he would. I think Trevor Rosenthal is flawed. We've talked about him being flawed. At the same time, he strikes out a lot of batters, and maybe he could be the best thing that they've got right now. So far we've talked Rangers, we've talked White Sox, and now we're talking Cardinals. I think of all the relievers on those teams, I think I would want to own Rosenthal for the next 10 days to see what happened. Do you have some of that same optimism for him?
I guess. I mean, look, here's the thing about talking about closers at this time of year is that unless you are just utterly desperate, like something's got to happen right now, you can wait because there are going to be more of these guys changing teams. There will be more opportunities. There's going to be more change. And so you don't have to commit to somebody right now. You can keep your eyes open and figure out who makes more sense in a week. So to me, yeah, I can see that. I can see Rosenthal as being a good fit, but I also don't think you need to be committing to any of those guys right now.
No, the groups of people who I think will probably be looking really hard will be the David Robertson owners. They kind of, like, he should go to waivers, so they might as well try to invest in someone and maybe keep rolling his roster spot until they find a closer, you know, between now and August 1st. And a lot of people were stashing Tommy Kahnle. So, and again, those people were probably – like really need saves. That's the whole reason they were stashing him in the first place. So there'll be a lot of movement with a lot of these relievers we're talking about in the next few days.
One manager, unlike Mike Matheny, who I think I would be willing to believe will get creative, is Buck Showalter. He is showing signs that maybe things aren't quite as cut and dried as we thought, where Zach Britton is the guy immediately upon returning. I can see a case that Britton and Brock are both worth owning. I also think there's a non-zero chance one of those guys gets shipped somewhere over the next week or so. Do you like one but not the other? Do you like them both? How do you size up Baltimore right now?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I still think that Britton, okay, assuming they're both Orioles on August 1st, I still think it flows back to Britton being the guy. That being said, since Britton came off the DL, he's made 6 appearances and doesn't have a save. Like, none of them were in save situations. And Brock got their most recent save. They haven't had a lot of save chances of late, but Brock got their most recent save, which I thought was just really telling. So I'm not dropping Brock, that's for sure. And some owners did, and I think that was a mistake. You know, he could keep getting saves, some saves for the Orioles, or he could get traded, or as you said, or as we talked about, Britton could get traded. If I had to guess, I would say Britton gets more saves than Brock the rest of the way, and it's not that close. But that I'm just hanging on. Britton was so amazing last year. I still think it comes back to him at some point. Do you think Britton outpaces Brock by a decent margin the rest of the way if they're both Orioles?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. I think that's a safe assessment. I think there's a pretty good chance Brock gets a few. I think he's the guy if Britton gets moved, and I wouldn't rule that out. But, yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. Mm-hmm. The Nationals go out and get 2 really good relievers, both of whom have closed before, And they still may not have their closer. I'm kind of baffled. I like the pitcher better. I like Doolittle the pitcher better than Madsen the pitcher. I think the Nationals have enough lefties that they could, in fact, go with a lefty closer. I would love to see Dusty Baker get creative and use both of these guys late in the game. But I also think there's a non-zero chance that they still get the ninth inning guy for the Nationals on August 1st. I still think there's a very real chance that he's not in their organization right now. So I think you can pick up Madsen and say he's more likely to be the guy currently there who gets saves. I think you could pick up Doolittle and say he's the better pitcher and he'll get some opportunities. And I think you can also say neither of these guys is going to get more than two or three saves because whoever it is still coming in. I'm probably picking up Doolittle by a hair just because I like the pitcher more. But are you any less confused about this than I am?
No, not really. I think we've talked, it's probably about the 15th show, and I think it's maybe the 15th show we've had since opening day, and I think it's probably the 15th show where we've talked about the Nationals bullpen. And I think I would pick up Madsen by a hair, mostly because he's right-handed and Doolittle's a lefty. Doolittle also has more injury concerns, so maybe by not having him be their closer, they can, you know, manage him a little better. But there's not much, and Doolittle did get the first save, so you know, he's already plus one on Madsen. Maybe it will be him. I do think, and you've talked about a lot, that managers want to have a closer. I put Dusty Baker in that category. I don't think he wants to go into the postseason without a closer, you know, a guy who in a really formulated back end of his bullpen. You're right, though. They might end up still going out to get someone else. Robertson was the obvious one with him off the market. There's still other relievers available, though, but with Madsen and Doolittle now, for them to get like a true closer, it's going to have to be, there's only a few guys out there now who they could get. I mean, they don't really need another Madsen or Doolittle type. They need someone who has lots of saves in their career, is pitching well right now, you know what I mean, can totally handle that job right away. I'm not sure who they get. I don't have a name anymore. I don't think AJ Ramos, for example, fits that bill. Kelvin Herrera just left a game last night. I don't know who they, and the Royals are back in it. I don't know who they get right now, so maybe this will be it.
I mean, they're mentioned with Justin Wilson, who's kind of in that same category, a guy who's done it some, who is a very good pitcher. You know, if they added Wilson, it's pretty clear to me that the one thing you would know is it wouldn't be Madsen. Like, the one thing, if they went out and added Justin Wilson, you know, the kind of the way that makes their bullpen set up, to me, what that tells you is that one of the lefties is going to close, because then you've just got an absolute army of lefties between those two guys, Perez, Grace, Romero. One of those guys, one of those lefties closes. You're not going to carry five lefty setup guys. So to me, if they add a lefty, then it's either the guy who comes in or Doolittle and not Madsen. But again, to me, this is another one of those where if you want to pick somebody up for a few days, go for it. But we don't really know how this is going to shake down for another few days. We move to the two-star pitchers, and I like this assortment. You gave me some good ones this week. R.A. Dickey at Arizona and at Philly. Vince Velasquez, home for Houston and Atlanta. Josh Tomlin, home for Cincinnati and at the White Sox. Jordan Montgomery, home for Cincinnati and Tampa Bay. Carlos Rodon at the Cubs and home for the Indians. Luis Castillo at the Yankees and at the Marlins. Seth Lugo at the Padres and at the Mariners. I like nearly everybody on there to some extent. Montgomery might be the top of my list even at home because I like the pitcher a lot, and I like him against the Reds. I like the matchups for Tomlin quite a bit. Actually, I like the matchups for Tomlin a lot. I like the matchups for Lugo, though I'm not crazy about the pitcher this year. But I like nearly everybody on that list. Who jumps out to you?
I like Rodon. I just think he has that potential to maybe carry a team for a week. I think at the Cubs is tough, but the Cubs lineup's been a little up and down this year, so I'll take my chances, I think. And then I think Castillo is my favorite. The at Yankee Stadium is obviously tough, but we already talked about the fact that he's off to a good start, you know, against tough competition. So I'll give him that shot. And the Yankees haven't been, like, lights out hitting since the All-Star break. So I'll give him that shot. And then at the Marlins, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I like Montgomery for two home starts, the same as you mentioned. I like Tomlin's matchup. R.A. Dickey has been quietly, like, very, very effective in about the last, like, 5-6 weeks. I mean, he wasn't great against the Cubs last time, but he wasn't terrible. And prior to that, had been really effective. I don't like him at Arizona, but if he can get out of that start okay, then the at the Philly start is a really attractive one. So he's probably next on my list. I agree with you that I would probably put Lugo last, even with the at San Diego, because the Mariners have been hitting pretty well. Lugo hasn't been pitching well. I don't love rolling him into Seattle.
But there's not a single guy on there that I would say, oh, no, don't do that. Yeah. That's pretty rare. So that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. When next we talk to you, the deadline will be almost upon us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.